Those have been really
You think
good.
We're done?
she's got this, like, I'm ready to complain to Chris face on. She's, like, ready to... She's just staring at you, like, are you gonna pay attention to me? You gotta go.
Yeah, I think it's time.
Simba.
It's time.
It is time.
You have to go, baby. You're not an adult about this. Come on. You know what you gotta do. It's no fun for me or you.
Oh my god, are you a vocalist?
Yes. I'm Hans Zimmer.
Oh my god, hi Hans.
Guten Tag.
Guten Tag, I'm Hans.
C'est moi. I am also French.
I bet he knows French. I'm I bet sure Hans Zimmer knows
He's a
French.
Polyglot.
Yeah.
He's a man of many talents.
Let's also say all the things we assume to be true about Hans Zimmer.
Well, he developed the musical instrument known as the Zimmerphone, which is the musical instrument that makes that big wah.
Is that true?
No. Oh. Yes. It's 40 feet tall, and it's an enormous horn.
Bwom!
And it just goes, bwom, to cap off musical chords.
He does like his bwom.
He's a bwom baby.
I have named my son Bwom Zimmer.
Bwom Zimmer. Hans Zimmer. And my son, Bwom Zimmer.
I'm sorry, how was that spelled?
Hans und Bwoms. Oh, stop, honey.
You sorry.
You want me to smack you? Come here, buddy.
No! Ah! I'm so awake now.
Wake up, you stupid bitch!
So awake now.
You'll never win the Gay Businessman of the Year award with that attitude.
As soon as I see my girlfriend come in, I'm just going to be like, hey, everyone, be cool about this, but I'm straight.
I'll stand up and applaud for
and
you.
I did it for love.
To Why Do We Watch This, the podcast where three romantic chums watch a shitty movie, talk about what they liked, what they didn't like, and how they would fix it while enjoying a themed cocktail. That's right, it's February, the month of love, and customarily, we do a rom-com. To kick that off, I am your host for this episode, Brendan, passionate, sincere, goofball, Drishler.
I am Chris, the college record for most penis in a single season, Revel.
And I am Lee. Do you know what that does to your kidneys? Your kidneys, Delahanty.
And if you can't tell by all that shouting about kidneys and penises, we watched 1999's romantic comedy Three to Tango, starring Matthew Perry, Nev Campbell, Dylan McDermott, and Oliver Platt, directed by Damon Santostefano.
What a name.
What a name, indeed. Eileen Broche McKenna has a writing credit on this movie, apparently.
I noticed that, and I was kind of surprised. I was like, wow, early days, perhaps?
I guess so, before she bought a zoo, apparently. anyway, before we get into discussing our rom-com for the year too much, we first, of course, have to discuss the drink that we made for this movie. And for Three to Tango, the drink that we made is called a hot Oski. A hot Oski is 1 ounce ginger syrup, 2 ounces of bourbon, lemon, blueberries, and some boiling hot water. To make the honey ginger syrup, you take half a cup of honey, half a cup of water, 1 ounce of grated ginger, mix them all up in a little pot on the stove, get them nice and heated till it simmers and starts to come to a boil, and then just let it simmer for a while, let it cool, and dump it into a bottle. It's good for about a week in the fridge. Nice. To make the drink itself, you muddle about 1.5 ounces of blueberries and 2 lemon slices in a heat-proof vessel. Pour a cup of hot water into the vessel and let it steep for 5 minutes. Pour bourbon and honey ginger syrup into another mug, then strain the water into that mug and stir. Then you garnish it with blueberries and a lemon slice. It is obviously a take on a hot toddy. Friends,
it's an Oski this time.
What did you think of the hot Oski?
I really liked it.
I did too.
It had a nice ruby red color. It was citric. It was nice.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
It was warm.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, I'm glad we did a hot drink.
Good warm drink.
Because it is fucking cold
and
out right
gonna
now.
And it's going to get colder.
And it's going to get colder. So frankly, maybe March will be another hot drink. Who's to say at this point?
Come August, more hot drinks,
yes. 98 degree weather outside, hot drinks all around, please.
You know, it's the year of hot drinks.
Yes.
I really liked it. I would definitely order this at a bar. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. I mean, we always knock hot drinks out of the park.
Yeah.
I'm always proud of our hot drink efforts.
I am too. I do like a good hot drink. We should consider maybe doing a tea one again. I feel like it's been a while since we've done a tea hot drink, which might be nice. But yeah, so that was the drink. I think it worked pretty well, as we can all agree. So here's hoping the next time we do another hot drink, probably next month. It works out just as well as this did. Having discussed the drink that we made, Chris, or Lee, who is it who is supposed
it's
to?
Lee. Okay, right?
It's me.
It's Lee.
So if I care to
really
find you, yes.
You're defying gravity right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If I care to find you on Wikipedia, could you please read...
Hold space for me.
Yes.
While I read the summary.
Yes, thank you. Please read the summary of Three to Tango.
All right. Architects Oscar and Peter Steinberg. Oh, sorry, Oscar. It looks like they're married.
You're getting ahead of yourself.
I got ahead of myself. Architects Oscar Novak and Peter Steinberg have just landed a career-making opportunity to design a multi-million-dollar cultural center for wealthy businessman Charles Newman. In a ploy for publicity, Newman has pitched Oscar and Peter in a neck-and-neck competition with their arch rivals and former colleagues, the hugely successful Decker and Strauss. When Newman meets Oscar and Peter, he assumes that they are lovers. Peter is gay, but Oscar is straight.
Ooh.
Under the mistaken impression that Oscar is gay, he asks Oscar to keep an eye on his mistress Amy and make sure that she does not talk to his wife Olivia. Oscar falls for Amy virtually on site, but she also thinks he is gay. Which is not exactly true.
No, there's another thing.
Where she doesn't realize it. Yeah. He is forced to maintain the charade to avoid getting into trouble with Newman and losing the commission. Matters become complicated when a news article about Oscar and Peter's supposed relationship is published in a newspaper, leaving Oscar in the increasingly frustrating position of having to fend off advances from various gay men while convincing his friends and family that he is simply pretending to be gay. Amy even sets him up on a date with her ex-boyfriend, football player Kevin Cartwright, but Oscar manages to defuse the situation by saying that he is in love with someone else. Despite the embarrassing misconceptions, Oscar forms a close bond with Amy as they continue to spend time together, to the extent that Amy moves in with him after she is kicked out of her apartment. At the final presentation for the Cultural Center, Oscar and Peter receive the commission, but Oscar is simultaneously told that he has won the award for Gay Professional Man of the Year, with Newman deciding that he will reveal his decision after the ceremony. After an awkward meeting between Amy and Olivia at the party, she and Oscar go to a bar. Amy, uncomfortable after meeting Olivia in person for the first
time.
Does
it say who Olivia is?
Olivia is Charles Newman's
okay,
wife.
I just think it's super weird that all of a sudden it's like, and Olivia, like, who the fuck's this?
Yeah, it's a bizarre. Okay. I don't know that we did say that. Yeah, it's
not a great synopsis, but anyway.
Amy leaves in frustration after she nearly kisses Oscar, prompting a brief argument between her and him, in which Oscar states that her relationship with Newman has no future. Amy and Newman have never fought, only because Newman doesn't care enough about Amy to fight with her, but Amy counters that Oscar is hardly in a position to criticize her love life when he hasn't been on a date since they met. After spending the day alone, Oscar attends the awards ceremony for Gay Professional Man of the Year. Although he initially continues his charade, while looking out at the people before him, he instead makes a passionate speech about how he admires all the men and women here who were able to tell the truth to their families about who they are, ending the speech by coming out of the closet as he admits that he is straight and in love with Amy.
That takes courage.
As he is applauded for having the courage to admit the truth, he runs after Amy only for her to punch both him and Newman and storming out. Peter then awkwardly accepts the prize that comes with the award, a date with Kevin.
What?
A date with Kevin. That's not even...
That is 100% not what happens in the movie.
Peter is thrilled, as one would be. And it's not awkward at all. They're both very well-spoken men.
Yeah. Good for them.
Yeah.
However, as Oscar sits in a restaurant where he and Amy ate together on the night that they met, Amy comes to see him. After confirming that there are no other lies and he genuinely regrets the deception, she says that she loves him too, and they kiss. During the credit scene, Olivia convinces Newman to go with Oscar and Peter's design, revealing that she knew about him and Amy and informing him bluntly that Oscar and Peter did the better job. There you go.
There it is.
There's some other flavored bits to that.
Yeah, well, there's some inferences, I think, here, too. Because the thing also in the beginning... So I had never... Lee, you had seen this movie. Chris and I had not. But, correct. Like, you didn't. It was not a movie you particularly, like, remembered super well, just that you had seen it.
I remember. I mean, a lot of it.
You remember the kidneys. Yeah. The thing that...
Don't say it. I remembered the Kevin Cartwright thing.
The thing that I was going to say, the thing that the Wikipedia article suggests is that Dylan McDermott hires convinces Matthew Perry to spy on Neve Campbell and make sure that she doesn't talk to his wife. Now, this is a weird inference because it's really that at all.
I remembered it as he is worried about her seeing other guys.
Right, which is true.
And then you read the Wikipedia article, and I questioned whether or not my memory was right.
Right.
And it turns out my memory was right.
Yeah, because he explicitly is weirded out when he sees Kevin Cartwright kiss Neve Campbell on the cheek, and he's like, me and my grotesque huge muscles are going to like help remove boxes or whatever.
Yeah.
And Neve Campbell clearly knows that this is like grinding his gears a bit, right? But then the next scene is him calling up Matthew Perry and being like, hey, can you go to
And there's a whole long conversation where they don't talk about him being gay. They talk around it. And Oscar thinks that he's talking about him being Hungarian, but he's talking about Oscar being gay. The point of that is, I actually remembered quite a bit about this movie.
Yes.
And Wikipedia gaslighted me. And you, by proxy, also gaslit me.
I think that's unfair to me on this, the month of love, for you to accuse me of such actions.
I just think that, you know,
it's so homophobic
gaslighting.
Yes.
Oh. Well, I don't.
And Lee,
the face you made.
You don't think that either.
Oh.
It's fun.
Yeah.
Being mean to women is fun.
This is the
we're about as progressive as this movie.
Yeah, basically. These would have been considered radically progressive jokes in the 90s.
I mean, I have to say that it is a better plot that Matthew Perry is convinced to stalk her and make sure she doesn't talk to men than make sure she doesn't talk to my wife, which is sort of an insane ask.
Yes.
Like, to be fair, either one paints the picture of Dylan McDermott as, like, a possessive lunatic.
Uh-huh.
So, which he is. That's certainly true.
No, I think the more insane ask is don't talk to other guys, because my guy...
Yeah, that's what he's saying.
Okay,
Okay. I'm sorry, did I say it backwards?
I thought you did.
I meant to say backwards. Okay, No, I think like, it's nuts to be like, don't, like, keep her away from my wife so she doesn't spill the beans to my wife. Like, that's kind of, like, goofy and insane, but to be like, you are my mistress, and I want to be clear, you are not my wife, you're my mistress, but if you so much as look at another man, I'm gonna fucking lose my shit.
Yeah. And the movie clearly knows that that's bananas.
Right, I mean, like, I don't think the movie is saying, like, this is a good thing, but the movie, I feel like, also never at any point is like, this guy's, like, a little more nuts than we think he is, right? Like, we know he's an asshole, and the movie he's presented is kind of an asshole, but, like, this is kind of a next level craziness sort of thing
it
that
is.
I feel like is not really adequately addressed in the movie.
I just want to point out, it's not just that when he gets home, his wife firmly tells him that they're going to go with Oscar and Peter. It's, he walks in and his wife immediately is like a dominatrix.
Yeah.
Right.
And
is like, go up. And you put on those red bikini briefs.
Yes.
I put to you that for however absurd we think this is, the only unrealistic thing about Dylan McDermott's character is that he is submissive to a dominant woman.
Yes.
That is it.
No.
I think that this is a very real man.
It is.
For sure.
Although, like, I do think it would be kind of, like, my thought, honestly, when that scene shows up at the end was what I told you guys, was that this was all part of an elaborate role play that they have going on. But where she knows that he's having an affair the entire time, and he knows that she secretly knows, but they're pretending that they don't know. But then, like, when she finds out who the woman is, then she can be like, you're a naughty boy and must be punished now.
I think that's the correct, that's, like, the how we would do this as a rom-com today.
Yes.
It's, like, an elaborate sec. And Neve Campbell didn't even know that this was a thing they were doing.
Yes,
this is, like, and this was a planned reveal. Like, he was going to bring his wife to this event where Neve Campbell was.
Right. It was like, it's almost a game where, like, I put my wife at one end and Neve Campbell at the other, and I see, like, if the two find each other, and if they find each other, I'm going to have, like, crazy hot sex with my wife because she'll find out that Neve Campbell's secretly here.
Yeah, I kind of love that. Like, I wish that was what...
No, it would be more... I think it would make a little bit more sense, frankly, because at the end of the movie, it's like a wife ex machina comes in, and she's like, no, you're giving the contract to these guys, and also we're not getting divorced, and you're going to put on little underpants, and I'm going to enjoy this. And he's like, okay.
I'm going to... whatever next social media account I make is going to be wife ex machina.
Wife from machine.
Yes. Here we go in Blue Sky, baby.
Yeah.
All right, so just to sort of kick off this movie, this is a movie from 1999. It is perhaps the apex of the 90s in many respects.
Boy,
is it ever. Everything about this movie, from as soon as you turn it on, where the opening credits are a 90s swing music revival, playing over footage of, like, shadows of men and women jumping around on instruments, to everyone's outfit. Everyone's look, I would say, in this movie is bad. I think, for the most part, maybe Dylan McDermott gets off the best, just because suits are kind of timeless.
And his hair isn't insane.
Right, his hair looks like hair that a person could have.
There's so many points where... And Neve Campbell, she's a beautiful lady. It's not her looks that are the issue here. It's... They, like, looks like they just put like 5 pounds of hair gel or pomade or product in her hair. And it's like she has this like hard like helmet shell. It's center parted bangs framing her face, but then sort of winged out, flared out a little at the end. And it just looks kind of shiny and hard.
Yes, like, right. You can knock on it, tap on it, it would just make a thunk noise.
Matthew Perry's hair is atrocious.
It's awful. And
it's like a little like fringe bang.
Right. There is some debate
flaccid.
About... Yeah,
flaccid
it is.
Fringe.
Yes.
Flaccid fringe.
Yeah, it's kind of flat down over his forehead. And it's also, there's some weird ass highlights to it.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I
it's
can't
kind
tell.
Kind of like bright orange.
Yeah, I was going to say, because like, it's not even like they're blonde or it's, but it looks literally just like they put the wrong hair dye on him.
It looks good in like dark light.
Yes.
But in the sun, it looks.
Right. In the first
horrible.
Scene when you see him, it looks like he just has like clown hair or something.
Yes.
Like, it's just simply not a good look.
It's the kind of orange that comes from trying to bleach someone with hair that's too dark.
Yes, yes, absolutely. It feels like they did one pass with the bleach and were just like, well, not getting any better than this. Yeah.
But that's also so 90s to have, like, just chunky tiger stripe.
Oh, yes, very much
highlights.
So. It's remarkable how, like, relatively close this was in time, and yet still looking back, I'm like, my God.
A whole nother world.
Right, truly. And, like, I remember all of this. I remember these looks. All of Neve Campbell's dresses feel like dresses I've seen on people.
Well, and I think especially, like, whenever she wears something that's sort of, like, sorry adjacent.
Yes.
Because that's very, very late 90s.
Right. We were very big on East Asian cultures
there were,
in that. So
there's
like,
Buddhas all over Dylan McDermott's place.
Right. Dylan McDermott has a bunch of East Asian influences throughout his sex pad. She's wearing vaguely like kimono. She wears a kimono in one scene.
Right.
It is kind of remarkable how big we were on East Asia for that brief window in time and just kind of incorporating it into everything we could do. Perry serves dim sum.
Right.
These might still exist, but didn't, like, malls all have those stores that were, like, the China gift store?
Right,
yes.
Yeah, like
buy,
View of the Orient or some
buy
shit.
Buy your weird Buddha statues and your sort of, like, porcelain bracelets.
Right, yeah, like, jade jewelry, paper fans,
I'm kind of surprised Neve Campbell never showed up with a bindi. but it also must be said that Oliver Platt is the most hard done by in hair. I don't know how to describe his hairstyle. I think I have he has sort of like zigzag, not
sideburns,
zigzag, but
like
almost like lightning bolt side. I don't know
how
to describe
them. Jut out
like racing
kind of
stripe?
Far. They come down, but then they
and
go
then they
out
follow
forward.
The jawline.
Yeah, but like there's nothing below that.
No.
So it's very strange looking.
And then it's like kind of shaved in on the sides, but then really big on top.
Yes,
it doesn't look good. It's
you know,
not a good
he
look.
Has huge hair
and a goatee.
In this movie. Yes. And I don't know especially with him and Matthew Perry, Chris, you had suggested that some of it was to show that this is why people think they're gay.
It gave me Caesar, Matthew Perry's hair, but like shitty Caesar.
I guess the thing, like, I never associated the Caesar as a haircut for gay men. I associated that with older straight men trying to conceal their lack of hairline.
I mean, maybe. But,
yeah, I don't know, but...
Maybe that was really hot at the time and I was too young to know, because I was trying to remember, like, I would have been like 13, maybe 12 when this movie came out, so...
Yeah, I mean, I do remember when the Caesar haircut was a thing. I remember, like, again, like I said, George Clooney had it and everyone thought it was really hot. There you are. But, yeah, so this is really kind of just a delightful panoply of 90s aesthetics at play here. Everything about it, the way it sounds, the way it looks.
Apartments look crazy.
Yes, the attitudes, the plotting.
Mm-hmm.
So having just sort of touched on that briefly, just, you know, as an idea of what it is that we're getting into here, the 90s aesthetics continues to how gay shit comes off in this movie. So... Let's talk a little bit about gay shit.
I mean...
Let's talk about some gay shit, guys.
So, I want to start with maybe a slight positive.
Yes.
I think Oliver Platt's performance as a gay man is fine. It's inoffensive. I don't feel like he's ever, like, lifting it up or anything.
Well, I mean, there are, like, a few where he says something like, don't make me make you my prison bitch or something
that.
Like that.
I hated that.
Well, that's not a good line. But
no,
the thing
it's
is,
not.
The writing is not, we can't really, not, like, blame, you can't blame Oliver Platt for
of
the writing,
course.
As I meant to say. I think that there's, like, normal, fine points about gay men made for the most part, at least by the characters, but, like, hey, we're just people like you,
right.
And, like, actually, we're just trying to do our jobs, and we're not looking for special attention,
right.
etc. Then there are also a lot of, like, very 90s, the thing I'm most interested in is, do you think it's any worse or better than other movies that were gay or about gay things.
In some ways better, in some ways less so.
I mean, I'd have to... This is, like, what are some other 90s movies that dealt with gay
there's
themes?
That one...
So...
Longtime Companion. You ever see that one?
No.
There's that one where there, there's, like... A woman and a gay man raise a kid together.
Oh, as no, I want to say As Good As It Gets. It's the Madonna one, right? Mm,
maybe, yeah.
Wasn't there one with Jennifer Aniston and Paul Rudd playing a gay man?
Plausible. I couldn't tell you. Oh, shit, what was it? I know exactly what you're talking about. It's like,
they think that they're not going to have companionship.
Right, they're both like, so like, let's just have a kid, I guess.
Yeah,
and then
they both want kids.
Right, and then it devolves into like a custody battle when
yes,
they want to
because
pursue their own.
They each like find, or one person finds someone, and
right.
Like, well, I want the kid for myself, and it's
right.
Like, well.
Yes, no, there is, I for the life, shit. I gotta look it up real quick and see what the fuck that is. Because that's gonna bug the shit out of me.
I want to say that was Rupert Everett, but I could be
I think you're
wildly
right.
inaccurate.
Sounds correct.
The next best thing, it was Rupert Everett.
Yeah.
Who's the lady in that?
Madonna is what I said.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes, that's exactly what this is. They yes.
This is good.
Well,
and by good I mean enjoyable, not necessarily like quality.
Yeah, I mean, sure, it sounds good, but so often these things in execution don't end up being good.
So it's kind of a roll of the dice.
I'm just saying,
wise.
Like the jokes that you get,
right.
I don't have them on hand, but they're. I feel like most of them are pretty standard, and I would say that like maybe the prison bitch line feels egregious because Peter is otherwise a decently written character.
Right.
Yes.
And so it's like, why did you have to say that at the
right.
end of the movie? But like, and the rest of the jokes are just kind of like sort of typical gay stuff where it's like the dad finds out or thinks he finds out that
okay.
Oscar is gay and is
right.
just like sort of throwing statues.
Right.
At
so that's like, that's,
I love that
I think that whole sequence is kind of like what tips it a little for me. Cause like, I think by and large, this is not more homophobic than say an episode of Friends would have been at the time where it's like, there are still jokes about like, to a certain point where it's just like lesbians, isn't that weird
right.
that like two
yeah.
women love each other? You also have things like that scene where his dad finds out, he passes out in the garden, falls flat on the ground, and then you see the mom calling Matthew Perry later being like, no, your dad's very chill with this. In the background you see the dad wearing a bucket on his head
like
throwing statues
yeah.
yeah. And then you also have shit like, and to be fair, I laughed at some of this, the scene where all of Matthew Perry's friends see the newspaper
yeah.
announcing that he's gay, his one friend who is spotting someone at the gym, and he drops the barbell, and you see the guy's legs like flip up in front of the camera. And
it is like, again, the movie I think leans in is trying to do this really broad comedy that probably just makes the jokes seem
worse,
more offensive.
Yeah, no, that's
yes.
that's also certainly probably true.
Because like with the other guys in the bathtub and like full on die,
right? Like he should be dead. This guy
he should be dead.
This guy opens the newspaper, sees like Matthew Perry is gay on the front page of the
yeah.
business section, like sort of jumps out of the tub a little bit, hits his head on a shelf where a radio is right next to the bathtub. The radio
on top of
yeah,
dangling
right.
over.
There is a shelf like above the
open
bathtub.
Water.
This shelf is like
and his head.
Right, it's like a foot above the bathtub, and
yeah.
he has a radio perched awkwardly on it. He hits the shelf with his head. The radio falls into the bathtub. Sparks start shooting out. He like grabs the radio and pulls it out. And is like, "Whoo, that was close." Basically, like, "No,
you're
dead,
dead,
sir. You have died."
That was also a character where we kept being like, "How are you not gay?"
Right. That's the thing. Yeah.
It really. I'm convinced that he's secretly gay.
Yeah.
It seems
I mean,
that way.
It feels. It feels like again, the better version of this would have it be a thing where Matthew Perry has these three dummy friends who always seem to be at his apartment, and you know, at the beginning they're there, and then later on when he quote unquote comes out as gay,
yeah.
they're all like, "Ooh, like, oh, Matthew Perry, we're like, are you gay? Are you trying to sleep with me this whole time?" Ooh. And you would think that in a better version of this movie, one of the three friends would be like, "Guys, actually, I'm gay, and I didn't have the courage to come out."
Yeah. Do you know the old meme, broke, woke, bespoke?
Yes.
The
yes.
broke one is what we get. The woke one is like the Rick friend is like, realizes he's gay,
yes.
and the bespoke one is like, Rick is like, "Actually, I've been gay the whole time, guys."
there is a gay amongst you, and it was me.
I really thought it was going in that direction because he goes, so you get the first two straight friends kind of having whatever reactions, but then you get to third friend.
Rick's acting is just very like sus.
Yeah,
yes.
No, it's
like, he's shifty eyed.
Yeah.
He
right.
seems like a little like, but the fact that he has remembered after all these years this one time,
right, where Matthew Perry
like brushed against
him
in
a hot
tub.
Yes,
yeah.
it feels like he's been thinking about this
like,
moment for a long time.
And the fact that was stored away in his head, I'm like, okay, so we're setting this up, but
yeah.
it
right.
not doesn't happen.
Yeah.
There's
another bit where Peter, the one that they all know is gay.
Uh-huh.
Is like, "I'm gonna bitch up all of you, who wants to go first," or whatever. And like, there's this moment of silence, and then the Rick is like, "I'll go second."
Yes,
it's just like, I don't know. He's maybe interested in.
Yeah, like I could be up for some little light S&M.
Yeah, a little light S&M.
I will say, I think aside from the fact that we are essentially watching a movie about a man under duress or otherwise pretending to be gay, which there's a lot of problems with that. I don't think. With some exceptions, like with that Oliver Platt line, it's mostly inoffensive to gay people. And I would say it's also an improvement that it doesn't present homosexuality as inherently comedic.
Yeah.
So, like, I like that little bit we get. I wish you got more of Peter's friends at that dinner party, because I like that bit where they just hear Matthew Perry shout, "I'm gay," and he goes... something like, well, I think I just won the poll.
Yeah. See, what I would like it better during that scene, honestly, is if no one says anything, the one guy just sort of looks at the ball and is like, and they all just hand him money. Yeah, yeah. And then, like, something else Matthew Perry says is taken out of context, and someone else is like, I can't remember what it was. We're like, I think where it's like Matthew Perry says something like, and they think we're both gay, and you want someone else to hear like, we're both gay, and someone else is like, hey, I called that one, right? And then you hear like something else absurdly ridiculous about like some sort of kink that he has or something, and a third guy is like, hey, guys.
You want to talk about like good business, that's some good business right there. And it can be like lampshaded. It doesn't have to be like so fucking broad, like a guy.
Right, guys have to like flat out be like, hand over your money, queens.
Just discreetly passing money back and forth. I like that it would go like, the money is just like trapped. Like
yes, right. Like as things keep escalating, like someone else keeps like being like, pay up now.
What I wanted to add though is that the other thing that does not come off well for both like just the gay people in general and how they're treated, but also the main character of the movie that we're watching. Like, obviously, he has to pretend that he's gay. He walks into this not knowing that he's pretending to be gay.
Right.
He feels stuck doing it because he's afraid to lose the job. But then it gets worse because then everyone else, like, the world finds out. And it becomes, like, a press thing. And his reaction is not, oh, my God, this is horrible. Everyone thinks I'm some sort of hero and I'm not even gay.
Mm-hmm.
His reaction is... oh my God, everyone thinks I'm gay. That's horrible. I don't want everyone to think I'm gay.
Right, you're right. At the various points, it's like, how will I ever get a girlfriend?
Yeah, which
and
is
you're
like...
just like, go fuck yourself.
And again, Peter sort of rightly points out like how asshole-y this makes him sound. Because he is saying things like, well, that's horrible. It's horrible. I don't want to be...
Right, I'm just a normal guy. Everyone thought I was just normal. Guy. And he's like, oh, so like gay people aren't normal then.
To the movie's credit, I appreciate that they... had those lines with Peter. It is still insane to me that you have worked with this gay man for a number of years.
You still say that, yeah.
Right,
and you still have this internalized inside of yourself. That's wild to me.
Even the shit, like, the guy, like, the DJ on the radio, and we know that, I think he's supposed to be an asshole.
Like a shock shock, yeah.
Right. There's the point where Matthew Perry wakes up to hear that he's made front page news as being gay, and the DJ is like, I don't care if you're gay, just don't go rubbing my face in it, which feels so much like the shitty sort of arguments you hear from, like, terrible people, where it's like, look, if you're gay, that's great, just, like, never mention it or act upon it in any way or make me have to think about it. I don't feel like the movie is outright saying that, like, this is a ridiculous... because even... and I know Dylan McDermott's an asshole in this movie, but even he just says something like, whatever two people do is none of my business.
In the privacy of their bedroom,
which is just one of those things where, again, it's, I'm okay with it, but I don't want to think about, like, butt sex.
He
doesn't say like what I remember is he specifically says doesn't bother me.
Yes,
but he says it again very performatively, like it's a badge of pride that you can put on. Like guys. I'm okay with people being gay.
Right, no, it does feel it does feel like almost like a capital L liberal straight person thing to be like, you know what, I'm very good with this sort of shit.
Right,
like I have no qualms if you actually are gay, but like please don't talk about this.
Yeah. It was also bananas. This isn't necessarily bad, but like at various points, Matthew Perry has to like turn down advances of other men and includes like some random guy on the bus, but even more notably, it includes this like super hunky like
football player
who seems to be famous, question mark?
Yeah.
At least locally famous.
I'm a little unclear, to be honest, but yeah.
It's because he's like a local... they're in Chicago.
Right,
local
so hero, he plays for the Bears or something, maybe?
Yeah, he's probably a Chicago football player, so he probably is pretty famous.
That's what... yeah, so like this guy is like... well known, well off, good looking, great shape.
Yeah.
And at one point, because Neve Campbell is friends with him, also, like, I'm a little unclear throughout the entire movie how many people know that this guy is gay or not, because Dylan McDermott doesn't know.
Nope.
It doesn't seem to really.
Neve knows for
Right,
sure.
Neve knows super well, and it doesn't seem to necessarily be like a secret, but it also doesn't seem like his dummy friends know this shit. But anyway, so you see them playing football at one point, and the football player, gay guy, tackles Matthew Perry and is like literally on top of him.
It's a near kiss.
I was going to say, there's some very like sexually heavy tension going on right there. And the guy, the football player, is like, I'm kind of into you, actually. Neve Campbell set us up on this, so do you think maybe you'd want to get together sometime? And Matthew Perry has to be like, no, I'm in love with someone else. Wink, wink. Obviously, we know it's Neve Campbell, but mm-hmm. the football player is another man. But when we were watching this, we were like, I don't know, Matthew Perry. Like, maybe I'm not gay, but I'll learn, maybe. I don't think you're going to do better than this guy.
I think, yeah, with certain exceptions, I think it's, like, okay on gay people. It still just drives me insane that, first of all, it's, like, front page news that he and Oliver Platt are gay and architects. Yes. Okay. They haven't even won the thing yet. They're just in contention, and somehow that's still
And it's still front page news that they are gay architects, yes.
He's getting this award for best gay businessman of the year. It's so weird.
Yes, not and really then, sure what quantifies you, but okay, sure.
Sure.
What have you.
And then he basically explains to this whole crowd of presumably gay people and their allies, I would assume, hey, actually, I'm not gay. He even uses the phrase, I need to come out, which I hate.
Yes, same.
Hate this idea that you're like, I need to come out as straight, go fuck yourself. No, you don't.
Yeah.
The fact that not only does hot football players start the applause, but the whole room applauds him because he's like, well, I was pretending to be gay, but it was for my job and also for love. And I'm like, no, you know what happens in that case? You're like, get the fuck out of here. How dare you fucking lie to me?
Right, like, I think it's one of those things where, like, it could end with him apologizing to the crowd and then leaving, and everyone in the crowd is like, what's happening here? But the fact that they all, like, applaud him for, it's like,
insane.
Having the courage to say that he's straight to a room full of gay people who are going to give him an award for being gay is a little nuts.
It's nuts, and it's also, like, to me, is the ultimate signal that this movie is not aware of how incredibly fucking shitty it is, this thing he has done. And I understand that the movie has gone through pains to make sure it's not entirely his fault. It's partially a misunderstanding. It's partially out of fear, yada, yada, yada. But at any point, he could have told anyone it wasn't the case. I'm sure if he had told Dylan McDermott, actually, I'm straight, maybe this isn't a good idea. Mm. I cannot imagine Dylan McDermott would just, maybe he would. I don't know. He is nuts.
Yeah.
But it's very frustrating to me that I feel like this movie's whiff is it's combining the rom-com con with sexual identity. And I just don't think that that's a pair that's going to, at least not anymore now, right? I look back on this and I'm like, I'm sorry, but lying about that is too serious for me to not be kind of offended and grossed out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I think having said that, having brought up the concept of the rom-com con, maybe we should kind of segue into that as a concept. Because this movie is very much an example of what we have named the rom-com con, which is any sort of romantic comedy where one character has a lie that goes on through much of the movie. The end of Act 2, the truth comes out, and the woman turns to him and cries, like, I can't believe you lied about X. And
he says, I can't believe it was a bet.
I gotta say, not even the only movie, but probably the first one where the rom-com con is that they're gay.
Well, I mean, the thing that kind of came to mind for me when I was watching this movie is how much it seems almost like the plot of Tootsie.
Yeah.
except without, you know, disguising yourself as a woman, but you're just pretending to be gay.
Yeah.
And, you know, aspects of Tootsie have not aged well, I would say.
Ooh.
But by and large, it's a very tight screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I think that movie does very well is that, like, anyone who knows that this is something that Dustin Hoffman is doing is like, this is an insane, unsustainable thing that you were doing. Like, what are you going to do? Like, are you going to pretend to be this woman for the rest of your life? Are you going to live
Dorothy
as
Michaels?
A woman? Yes. Are you going to pretend to be Dorothy Michaels for the rest of your life?
Yes.
Everyone is like, this is not a thing you can keep doing. At some point, the truth is going to have to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, yeah, I'll punt that down the road and we'll worry about it later. Whereas in this one, it feels like every character is sort of like, well, we could keep this up for forever, right? Like, couldn't we just keep doing this forever?
He even has that conversation with Oliver Platt. In fact, he only comes out as straight when he sees it Neve Campbell's in the audience.
Right. The conversation that he has with Oliver Platt before he comes out on stage is him basically being, we'll keep this going for a few years and then I'll meet another woman. But it's one of those things where, like, I as a viewer am watching this and being like, literally everyone in Chicago seems to have read the front page story on the business section stating, like, local man is gay, makes buildings.
Yeah.
And you, like, you think at some point in the future you'll just go up to, like, a random woman in the bar and she won't be like, hey, weren't you that gay guy who was on the front page of the newspaper? Now, I know, as we discussed while watching this, in real life, sexuality is a spectrum. Just because you feel one way doesn't mean you always feel one way. You can mostly feel one way, then meet a woman and decide, actually, I'm in love with this person now.
But of course,
that's perfectly fine. in this movie, of course, bisexuality is not a thing that ever comes into question.
No, but omnisexual.
Omnisexual is a thing that comes in as a joke.
Throwaway joke.
It's also like 1999, right? Yeah. So even in real life 1999, yes, we've heard bisexuals by that point. Is that taken seriously by the majority of people in America by then?
No, we were aggressively like, bisexuality, they're kidding themselves. Who are we kidding?
Right.
Like,
it's a stopover on the way to gay town.
Right, like that's not a real thing that anyone ever is, actually. So in this movie, canonically in-universe, we must assume that bisexuals don't exist in this world. So how do you keep the charade going for the rest of your life? That's just the question that I want someone to stop and ask Matthew Perry at some point. But it seems like all of his friends are like, you know what, like, this can work. Yeah. Let's keep doing this sort of thing. It's just insane to me that at no point in this con does anyone ever stop to say, like, what's your end game here,
especially
though?
Oliver Platt. It's weird that he's like, yeah, I guess we'll just do this.
Right, you would think that Oliver Platt would be, like, the voice of reason, the one who's secretly being like, okay, but, like, what happens tomorrow now at this point? Like, what happens after you've accepted this award from a gay organization and then you come out and say, I was just pretending to be gay, actually. I'm really straight and I'm in love with Neve Campbell.
I thought it was especially messed up that, and I thought this was completely unnecessary just from a story and script perspective. Why tell Dylan McDermott, oh, I'm 100% gay, but Oliver Platt's the one that's straight?
Yeah, no, that's such a weird snag. It's basically like, it's in there for why? Like, what, like, how does that pay off in any meaningful way? Right.
I don't think we ever saw the scene where that happens.
It's during the conversation where Matthew Perry thinks they're talking about being Hungarian, but Dylan McDermott is talking about being gay, where he says something like, oh, I thought Oliver Platt was, and Matthew Perry's like, no, no. I'm Hungarian, and Dylan McDermott thinks he means gay, and he's like, oh, so Oliver Platt's not this way? And he's like, no, just me, wink, wink. And so that's why everyone thinks that. Now, it's weird again because it poses a problem then also, because in this newspaper article, the person writing the article seems to assume they're both gay. And then at some point someone says, I can't remember who it is, but says to Oliver Platt, or I think Dylan McDermott says to Oliver Platt, like, hey, in that article, they said you were both gay, but I know that you're actually straight, right? Don't you think this will cramp your style or something? And Oliver Platt's like, oh, don't worry about that. Yeah, in real life, this is weird.
I think it's just one of those deals of otherwise it's an acceptable unreality of a movie, right?
Yeah.
It's an unsustainable lie that cannot possibly last long term.
Right.
But I think when it's paired with something like this, it just feels so much more dire and weird.
The problem is that it's not really just like, it's not even just on Oscar.
Yes.
It really is. At some point, Peter needs to be like, this is not cool anymore.
I agree.
Yeah, no, again, like, you would think that he, having been kind of a voice of reason this entire movie, should be the one to step up and be like, hey, you know what? Like, we've gone too far.
Yeah.
We've gone too far. Terry.
Is this, and I also wanted to check the year on this movie, but is this movie sort of like an inverted In-N-Out?
Yeah, it kind of is.
It is kind of the anti-In-N-Out.
The anti-In-N-Out.
It kind of is.
Yeah, out in. Because the thing is, I haven't, number one, I remember that was a movie, but I've never seen In-N-Out. Oh, and I had to I had to double check that I was correct about what the plot was, which I was.
But the thing also with In-N-Out is that Kevin Kline's character realizes, oh, actually, I am, in fact, gay.
Yeah. There is no active deception happening in In-N-Out. Because he doesn't know.
Except with himself.
Yeah, he doesn't know that he's gay. He's finding out simultaneously.
Yeah. Yes.
So that he is sort of outed by a student.
Yes, accidentally outed by a student who assumed he was gay.
It's a funny movie.
It is. In-N-Out
in the way that, like,
well, I think.
Even if that student knew for a fact, that's still a crazy thing to do.
You're from a small town in, like, the middle of nowhere. You're not going to go on and be like, thanks, gay teacher.
And you clearly knew.
Well, and you also love...
That nobody knew he was gay. So why would you stand there on national TV?
I remember this so clearly. I just love that it's Matthew Dillon, right?
It's Matthew Dillon, Matt Dillon.
No, I'm sorry, I call him Matthew.
Matthew.
So formal.
But I also
we're familiar, he and I.
He, like, wins the Oscar or whatever, and he's like, this is for my teacher, Mr. Brackett.
Who's gay?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things that, like, it works in the world of the movie because he's presented as, like, a well-intentioned idiot.
Yes.
Who's being gay, teacher.
And it's slightly a heightened sort of idiot world that we're operating inside of.
Yeah. Right. This feels like it wants to be a little more grounded than something like In-N-Out, which is a little more farcical in nature.
I kind of think it could have used some more, I think if it were more farcical, perhaps I would feel less troubled.
I agree.
By its choices.
Yeah, no, on honestly, I think a dash of farce would probably not go amiss here, honestly.
Yeah.
It plays things a little too, no pun intended, straight,
yeah.
I think, for this to really work as well as they want it to work.
I agree.
Kind of a lot of missteps going on here. Yeah, I guess that's kind of the issue with this whole sort of rom-com con. It's just such a wild, unsustainable premise for this mm-hmm. movie.
Yeah.
And it's just what I think Roger Ebert referred to in his review, because I looked it up, as like the idiot ball plot, where mm-hmm. like this only works because no character will outright say a very simple thing to each other and just keeps letting it spin and spin for the entire movie. So as we've all established, at any point, almost any point, this could stop if one of the characters would just outright say something to the other one. Mm-hmm. But no one does, because otherwise the plot of the movie will not continue to spin forward.
Yeah.
So this is something I always find frustrating in movie plots. Anything can be cleared up by simply two characters just sitting down and being like, you thought X, but actually Y. And there is always a contrivance as to why they cannot do such a thing. And as we said, there are ample opportunities for this character to do the right mm-hmm. thing. He never does up until the end. He gets congratulated by gay people for coming out as straight. Everything works out well for him. Nev Campbell shows up and is like, I know you lied to me, but I think there's really something going on here, so why don't we go out?
If anything, she's just waiting to hear, do you feel bad about lying to me? And as soon as he says yes, it's like this relief, like, watches her, like, finally, then we can be together because you're actually yeah. straight. And I'm yeah. just like, have some self-respect.
Can we talk about Nev Campbell's character, though? Because
yeah,
I
yeah, let's, well, let's jump to characters and we'll start with her, then.
All the stuff that Oscar does, and all the, you know, all the guys, they don't come off well. But I yeah. also think that Nev Campbell's character is written terribly.
You know, I agree.
It's a bad character.
Yeah.
I don't blame the character, but I think that it's like an offensive character to no. have to watch.
No, I would agree with you.
What bothers you? I agree, but I'm just wondering, like, what was getting you?
Well, again, I forget the phrase I used, the pejorative phrase that would have been used to describe her, but I said it during the we were watching the movie.
Well, like proto-manic pixie dream.
No, Chris
girl,
said
but,
that. Oh, okay. I said something else. Wild. Damaged goods.
Damaged goods, yes. That's what it was.
Yes, that's
it,
true.
It very much feels like that's what people would call Nev Campbell in this movie.
Yes.
She clearly has some sort of hang up about, I don't know, her self-esteem or
right
her
or like commitment yeah or yeah. like, because she even says at the end of the movie about how she dates unavailable men.
Yes.
And she's like, I've been with Dylan McDermott and he has a wife and I have mistress and now I'm into you, Matthew Perry, and you're gay. Like, boy, talk about unavailable. She realizes that there's something amiss yes. here, but obviously the screenplay is not intelligent enough to dissect this in an interesting or innovative
Ooh.
Way.
They just sort of paint her as somebody who, like, makes bad impulsive decisions
yeah.
and doesn't, like, have any kind of, like, forethought or plan or I don't know.
Right. There is, I think, a potentially interesting way to do this as a character. The other movie that this reminded me so fucking much of when I was watching, aside from Tootsie, is the movie The Apartment.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at Shirley MacLaine's character in that movie, she is, again, quote-unquote damaged goods,
yes.
but like in an intelligent, interesting sort
yeah.
of way.
And she's like self-aware about
right.
it.
Right, and like she knows that she's miserable.
Yeah,
you know, like,
but she doesn't know how to get out of it.
Right, yeah, like this is just sort of like a broken, unhappy woman who's
yeah.
trapped in a miserable relationship and like doesn't think she can ever do
yeah.
anything better.
She like literally thinks like, well, this is the best I'll get.
Right.
Being this guy's mistress.
Right. As a concept, the idea of, you know, a character who is in a relationship with someone who they can never have and having the wherewithal to understand that this is a bad thing, but also know that just sort of, this is it. This is all I'm going to do. Like, that's an interesting character study. And I kind of wish Nev Campbell's character had a little bit more of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, there are definitely elements to her character that I like and that I think Nev plays pretty well. Like, I think she comes across as kind of, I don't like to use the word spunky for, like, rom-com
yeah.
no, but
characters,
it's
but,
there.
Like, it's
yeah.
there. She does as fine a job as one could hope you would
yeah.
do for something like
I
this.
I mean, I think an interesting angle for the character could have been something like her tricking herself that she's using
yep.
him just as much as he's using
yep.
her, but that's not what's happening.
No,
that never
yeah.
comes up at all. Like, that would have been a good way for her to have some sort of rationalization.
Yeah.
But as it is, she's just like, no, I'm great. This
yeah.
is great.
Right. And, but, well, that's the thing, too, is I feel like she has utterly convinced herself of this up until the point that she meets his wife at the party, and then everything immediately shatters, and
yeah,
she's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
oh my God, I thought I could handle this, but I can't handle this. And like, again, this is a potentially interesting moment where like you have convinced yourself this whole time that this is good, I'm
yeah.
doing fine,
mm-hmm.
everything is great. And then as soon as the wife comes into the picture, you can like do some emotional probing and be like, now why did actually seeing the wife who you knew existed this whole time, like why is this the moment that suddenly caused you to spiral out of control?
Oh.
That's a potentially interesting conversation to have, some potentially interesting character work to do, but obviously we never see it because as soon as they leave the party, Nev Campbell is just like, well, that went okay. I think that went okay, right? Let's go get drunk. That's pretty much all you get.
Also frustrates me, though, is I think the only resolution she really gets of this sort of exit from this toxic bad relationship with Dylan McDermott is just punching him in the face. I'm not saying that he didn't deserve it, but I do wish this were more comprehensively addressed and maybe just giving her a moment of realizing, oh, wow, I was talking myself into staying in a bad place.
So do you remember the scene where Matthew Perry first shows up at the gallery opening? There's that weird, ugly-ass sculpture with, like, eyes moving. Yeah. Do you think the movie should end with Dylan McDermott trapped inside an ugly-ass sculpture?
Yes.
You see his eyes moving around and, like, Neve Campbell, like, dusts her hands off and is like, and now that's the end of you, sir, and like, walks away.
Can we do a horror sequel? Because in reality, every time she wasn't on screen, she was out there putting someone inside a statue. Yes.
Anyway, but yeah, no, I do agree with you. It doesn't feel like there's a good sort of closure with her. It feels, because of the web of deceit that this movie has woven, it feels like she's walking into another bad relationship at this point. So, you know, I feel bad for this woman, but again, she's like sinking into a quagmire of her own making.
I just feel like if I was in her shoes, I would just be like, you engaged in this level of deception for your job? Like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah. Also, she's functionally the only woman in this movie, really.
Yeah,
the wife has, like, two scenes.
Yeah, the wife, like, it's so insane when the wife finally shows up, who is a character we have not seen or addressed before. Yeah. She shows up there, you see a scene of her drinking champagne in that Asian bed whenever all this is going, whenever the gay businessman ceremony is being broadcast live on TV for some reason, and the aftermath reporter is like, a woman left the ceremony and punched two men in the face. Footage at 11.
Being broadcast, I might have been being filmed for, like,
I'm sure, but it's just such an insane thing. This is the footage you play right before the news broadcast ends for the night. We're like, and in lighter news.
But I think it was probably, they made bigger splash because Neve Campbell punched two men at it. Right?
No, I'm sure that's it. I just think it's like, that's that it every is character is like watching this happen on the news. Then at the end, she comes out again. When I was first watching this movie, and the movie ends with Matthew Perry being like, I'm not going to get this job, and you know, our business is going to be screwed, but that's okay. Like, and I'm thinking, okay, maybe this is the punishment you deserve for, you know, lying to all these people. And then at the end, the wife just shows up out of nowhere and is like, no, Dylan McDermott, you're going to give them the contract, and they're going to make the $90 million building because theirs was the best. It's like, oh, okay, so no one has to learn anything or grow in any way because some rich wife will just show up and be like, I'm resetting everything, we're back to normal.
Even though, to be clear, she's not wrong.
No, she's not. The
John
other building
T. McGinley
was...
and Bob Balaban's, Ted McGinley rather, and Bob Balaban's thing looked weird.
Yeah,
and
ugly as shit.
Ugly, and then I don't know how I feel about that little kind of like button sight gag.
Where you see them in bed together.
They're actually gay.
Yeah, they're the gay ones this whole time. Yeah. Like, that's just, like, okay. Like, you had to, right? Like, you guys just, whoever was writing this was like, wouldn't it be fucking hilarious?
Wouldn't it be so funny?
If they were the gays?
Again, the funniest thing you can imagine.
Is two gay men.
Two gay men.
Yes.
What's funnier than one gay man?
Two gay men.
But you know what, you're right that Neve Campbell is functionally the only woman, because, like, her friends aren't really...
No, her friends are in, like, one scene.
And then, other than that, it's the secretary. The very well-paid secretary.
Yeah, no, the secretary...
loyal as fuck.
Yeah, I was gonna say, frankly...
She's getting him up off the floor.
Yeah, I think whatever the secretary is getting paid, it is not enough. The secretary deserves to have a stake of ownership in this company or some shit. Again, I know I said this. It's such a fucking weird misunderstanding that prompts this whole thing.
Yes.
Where she sees Matthew Perry and Oliver Platt being like, I love you, we're such good partners, let's fucking knock it out of the park. And she sees them hiding from behind a column and is like, interesting. And then talks to Bob Balaban and is like, are they, like,
you know
partners? Yeah. And Bob Balaban's like, I think it would be very hilarious if they were, so I'm going to lie and tell her, yes, they are gay.
Also a form of homophobia.
Yes, it is. Very much.
Be intimate or soft with each other.
Right, yeah, no, exactly. I think it's insane that she sees them doing this and her first thought is like, gay? Question mark? And then she also tells Dylan McDermott, where Dylan McDermott's like, well, they're like a good team. And she's like, I think they're like a very good team, if you know what I mean. Wake, wake. Why do you care? Why are we telling anyone this? I realize, again, it's a different time period. Maybe at the time, just gossiping that someone was gay was fascinating enough to tell your boss.
Yeah.
But maybe. Like, come on.
Let's go to Matthew Perry.
It's interesting that in the 90s there was such a thing where people were like, we think Matthew Perry's characters are gay. Because this happened with Chandler on Friends all the time.
It sure did.
And I guess it's just that, like, he's neurotic and dresses interestingly.
The part that also gets me, this is going to sound like a slam on Matthew Perry, it's really not, but there's so many lines. Not so many. There's a bunch of lines the people are like, wow, do you work out? Your body looks great. You have like an award-winning ass or whatever. And I'm just like, no offense to Matthew Perry. Yeah. I mean, you know, rest in peace. You're great. Yeah. But I don't know you for your body. And yeah. I don't think that's really, it was just, that was weird. I mean, aside from the fact that I find his overall mission to be bad, I think he does well in the role.
Yeah, I think that he commits and Nev have good chemistry.
They do.
Even though, like, as we said, the characters are dumb. You know, there's no... I don't understand why these two want to get together. Beyond sex. I don't understand why these two should stay together at the end of the movie. Like, I don't understand why this is a happy ending. They're good.
There's also an instinct of when in doubt, do some physical comedy.
Yeah, I wonder how much of that is both of them having TV training, you know?
Probably.
It's interesting that all three leads of this are TV actors.
We're huge TV stars,
right,
at the
who
time.
Are kind of dipping their toe in the waters of feature films.
Oh, I meant to look up if this was before or after Scream.
Scream was 6, I want to say.
1996?
Yeah, so this is definitely after Scream.
Post-Scream,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and Scream, she is a high schooler, remember?
True. So. And in The Craft, which I think was also before this.
Yeah. I don't really have anything bad to say about Matthew Perry, I guess, in this. Dylan McDermott.
He plays a psycho really
well. Very convincing.
I mean, like I said to Lee, like, if you're looking for someone to play, like, a handsome, vacant, empty-eyed psycho with, like, no redeeming qualities or personality to speak of, Dylan McDermott is your man.
I think he kind of embodies the smarminess pretty well. Those moments that Lee kind of pointed out of him being very, I'm okay with it, very performative,
yeah,
was pretty good. It's a good diet Patrick Bateman.
It is. Yes, it is very Bateman-esque.
Yeah.
It is. And this probably goes back to the writing, but again, why is Neve Campbell with this man at all? Like, truly, I just want to know, is it just like he's hot and you want to have sex with him? That's fine. That's why a lot of people get together. Perfectly valid. I just want to know why she's so invested in being with this guy who seems to have nothing to offer her.
It doesn't seem like she's not well. It doesn't seem like she's, like,
she's
financially
had a lot of other
bad
boyfriends.
Off. Right.
Yeah, right. She's not, like, kept, you know? It's not like she's living in a fancy apartment somewhere that he puts her
Do
in.
Do you ever see her apartment?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You do?
Matthew Perry goes with her to her apartment. That's where she showers.
And then there's, like,
that's
a boat
right.
problem or something goes wrong.
Yeah, some contrivance
right.
to
that's
make
right.
her move in with Matthew
yeah.
Perry. I just kind of want to know why. Why this guy? Again, just that he's handsome and rich, like, that's fine, but, you know.
Again, he must have made a pass at her, and she was like, and she's, again, so like, fucked up that she's like, oh, yeah, a guy wants to be with me.
Right, yeah, yeah.
I think that's the only why we really get, right?
Is that, yeah. I mean, I'm surmising, because based on how badly her character is. So.
Yeah, and I think, and that's a valid answer in so much as anything is. Why does anyone choose to have an affair with a married person? That's perfectly fine. There are dumber reasons for doing this, but,
I mean,
like, still.
You have self-esteem issues, and a rich guy is like, I wanna
fuck you.
Fuck
I think
you.
You're beautiful. You'd be like, okay,
like,
got
sure.
it. Yeah, let's do this shit. But again, just, like, explore this a little bit.
Right.
I don't know.
We don't know. Yeah. Again, the movie's not interested in what her problems are.
I mean, I guess Oliver Platt. Like, is there anyone else you'd really want to speak to aside from Oliver Platt?
I mean, I like Oliver Platt.
I think Oliver Platt does a pretty decent job of playing a gay person.
He
brings a dignity to the character for the most part.
He's human, aside from a handful of lines we've already mentioned, which aren't his fault, but, you know, and he does the best he can, but they play him as human. I appreciate that the character is at least written to have enough self-respect to be like, fuck you, Matthew Perry, like, what are you, like,
Glad he gets with the football player.
I mean, again,
at the
like,
me too.
Aside from being sort of vaguely Frasier-esque a normal man,
right,
do you know what I mean?
Right,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Frasier-coded.
Yes, a little Frasier-coded. I do just want to point out, I think...
he's Frasier-pilled.
The one other thing I just wanted to point out about his look is... He wears what I think I described as Andy Serkis's suit from 13 Going on 30, because it's like dark black.
Oh, yes.
And then... Like
bright yellow.
Lime
green
yellow.
It is like an aggressive pop of color below that. Which, I wonder, 90s, is this just like a...
90s.
Is this like what gay men wore in that? Or like what
know.
A costume
just,
designer...
It is just like horrifically...
It's ugly as hell.
Do you also remember when Matthew Perry comes home from the first night of meeting Neve Campbell? And we're just supposed to believe that one of the things that... Oliver Platt did while he was just bored and awake was just gelling his hair in weird directions.
The spikes, yes. He put his
hair
up.
It is like half FLC punk.
Yeah, it is.
It's like
right. They're quasi-liberty spikes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's all you got. I don't know if there's anything else to say about characters, because there's not really that many other full characters to comment on in this movie. I don't know why Bob Balaban's here. Truly, I don't, but there you are.
Maybe he needed to pay for that addition.
No, that's true. You know what I mean? You gotta take gigs, but you can get them. Yeah, I get it. You're a character actor. The only thing I want to throw out real quick is just a real brief looking to score, which is to say that this movie is toe to tip covered in 90s revival swing music. Yes. Every fucking yeah, from the opening to the end credits and peppered throughout.
Wow.
It is so much of that music. Like, again, if you wanted to sort of
trumpet, guys.
This movie, like, truly is. I think if you wanted to explain to aliens like what the 90s were like in America, you could just show them this movie and be like, this is it right here. It's looked and sounded like this.
Guys, I don't want to hear an unmuted trumpet. 90 minutes.
Let him rip. Yeah. It did really, I think we even talked about it. It sort of reminded us of those Gap ads. And then there's just randomly over the credits a swing music video.
Music video, right. And you had said, Chris, when we were watching, are any of the actors in this music video? No, they're not. It's just a music video with the guy singing. You would think at the very least there should be footage or bloopers of the movie.
Right.
No, it's just a music video of this guy singing this song.
I get such a weird, satisfied feeling seeing references to that just very specific moment in time. And I look forward to the time when we recognize the Gregorian chant micro craze in the same way.
Well, next year we'll try and find a rom-com that deals exclusively in that. Yeah. Where the opening credits are just chants. And the other thing I want to throw out real quick is the aggressive sound design that this movie has, where it's not enough for just there to be a noise. It has to be the loudest, most over-the-top version of the noise. Yeah. Like, when Dylan McDermott is squirting Purell into his hand, it goes like... Whenever he is dropping drops into his mouth, it's like bloop, bloop, bloop. Just like whenever his doors in his office open, they make the Star Trek like whoosh noise as they open. It's just like.
And the crunch of that tuna melt?
Yes, that tuna melt. They eat like a very disgusting looking tuna melt, and it is like you're biting into drywall. It's like. And food should not sound like this.
They way overdid the Foley.
I think it's just one of those things where, again, like, well, it's a comedy, so don't be afraid to go big with the sounds. And so someone earned their paycheck going big with those sounds that day.
Weirdly, the movie is very big in its comedy, but the funnier moments are not the big comedy.
No.
It's the naturalistic dialogue that you sometimes get with Matthew Perry. And
characters. And I think if we want to throw out, like, a thing we liked real quick, like you had said, Lee, the sad montage is halfway a good idea.
Yeah.
Where it's just Matthew Perry kind of retracing his steps almost into, like, all these places. Places where he had a better time, but things are shitty. So, like, he's sitting by the lake on the grass, and all of a sudden, like, the sprinklers turn on.
Yeah.
He goes to the diner, and a guy, like, runs out and throws
but
up.
He's, like, looking up at the sky, smiling, like,
yes.
Ah.
Yeah, like,
I have been here once.
Yeah, such memories. I remember my meat vomit cute here with Nev Campbell. And, like, that's kind of funny, and it's kind of well done. And there's also the moment where the one friend drops the barbells on the guy.
That was
like, that's enjoyable. You know, it's like I said, a lot of the smaller moments are the ones that kind of end up being funny.
There was the bit of
the
movie where I was laughing and then I said, that's a good joke.
I wish I remembered. I don't.
There was some verbal line. There was some actual dialogue. That, and I didn't find it as funny. But when I was a kid and I saw this movie, I was obsessed with that kidneys
thing. Line. Yeah.
I still think it is fun. Oliver Platt just does a really performance of that line. But it's not as funny to me as when I was a kid when he's just like sort of shouting.
Screaming kidneys.
But I do enjoy when he walks away grabbing like the plans and starts hitting himself in the head with the plans going, my
God. Well, the other thing is like this fragile intern who shows up in two scenes is dropping blueprints as she's trying
everywhere.
To cross a busy stretch of hallway where people keep running in front of her and they like run over the blueprints as she drops them. By the time she gets to the end, she has one blueprint left and she just puts it on the desk and starts crying and walks away.
I love it. I was obsessed with her because I was also obsessed with how, so she has a ton of blueprints, drops them, and then makes no effort to pick them up.
Right, she like looks back briefly and then just sees people running over them as like lost
when
cause.
When Oliver Platt is like leaving from his kidney monologue, she's carrying over some of the ones I think that she had to go back and get, and he grabs them from her.
And she starts crying again.
That was funny. I thought bits and pieces were funny. I thought the model reveal was pretty comical just because you see the rivals and it's just like aggressively crazy when they unveil
the
models.
Yes, yes.
It feels like the Simpsons car moment.
The Homer car, yes, it does very much.
It really does.
Where, like, you want everyone's jaw to drop upon seeing this and be like, monstrosity.
So good.
Yeah, so it is interesting that I think the funnier moments tend to be, for the most part, smaller moments, with the exception of, like, shouting kidneys or hysterical crying or shit like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, so many, I think, of, like, the big sitcom-y humor moments are the ones that, by and large, kind of are duds don't work.
Like, again, the guy throwing the radio into the thing, which is like, you're dead.
Right, again, you have died at this point, sir.
You have deceased.
Right, or you know, the dad being so distraught that his son is a homosexual that he is destroying his property. So, having covered this movie from toe to frosted tip, let's talk about fixes. Right. Is there anyone who would like to kick us off?
I'll go first. I know I don't go first often, or if in recent history things. And I just want to get this out of the way.
Yes.
I'm sort of spitballing here.
Yeah, yeah.
I've sort of spun up a new idea while we were talking about it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
But here's my three to tango. It lives up to the title.
Yes.
Now, this
it's about three people taking tango
lessons.
I don't
know if this takes place in modern day. It might take place between the 90s and now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But it takes place in a world where Oscar is still straight and Peter is still gay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's known. Peter's gay.
It is known.
Peter's gay.
Yes.
He's a gay architect. There's this, like, guy who, you know, whoever Dylan McDermott's character is, he doesn't have a mistress.
Okay.
He wants to look good for someone in the world, and he's going to do a woke DEI hire so that he can get good press or whatever, like that he cares about diversity
or
whatever. He knows that somebody in this firm is gay.
Right.
He mistakes who is gay.
Uh-huh.
And I think he's kind of like a well-intentioned, not totally morally broke guy,
mm-hmm.
but he's like ignorant, like in the pure sense of like doesn't know, he just doesn't know shit.
Mm-hmm.
And also, is a little tech bro-y in the sense that he just, like, is so out of this, like, world. He's just not, you know, he never took a social sciences or a philosophy course in his life. He doesn't know what they are. But he's not, like, evil or, like, sadistic or a horrible man like Dylan McDermott's character is.
Yeah.
Maybe slightly well-intentioned dumbass at the start. And it's really obvious from their first meeting that he's making a big deal about this not being a diversity hire, but the two of them are like, this is diversity. He's doing it. He wants to look good for people.
Right.
And they're like, but whatever. We're desperate. We need the money. It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do it. And then it immediately becomes evident after that that he thinks the wrong one is
right.
gay or whatever.
He hired the...
Yeah. But he's already leaked it to the press or something
right.
that he's hired, and he's like, and guess what? We hired this
I got
guy,
a gay.
This guy. And then, like, the two of them have a power. So, like, Oscar and Peter are now like, Jesus fucking Christ, what do we do? Like, and then I think, like, they're both equally now culpable in that they have to be like, we need this money.
Yeah.
Like, you have to be the gay one now.
Yes.
Like, this is just how it has to be. I don't know how we're going to get through this, but this is bad. And I think I want it to become not necessarily a love triangle, but I think that it's a gay rom-com between the CEO and the straight architect. Maybe.
Oh,
I want it to be three tango where it's the three of them and
yes.
it gets confused about who's with who.
I like that.
That's basically all I have because that's like what I think the movie should be.
Okay.
If we're going to call it three to
I was going to say that makes a lot more sense given the name of the movie.
Yeah.
Which has astonishingly little to do with the plot of this.
I haven't worked out the sort of like the back and forth. Maybe the CEO is gay. Maybe he's closeted. I don't know. But there has to be, I think it's called Three to Tango because it's these three guys and there's some weird sexual confusion going on and discovery.
We love to see it.
We love to see confusion and discovery. May I go next?
We love to see confused gays. Go ahead.
We love confused gays.
I am
gays.
A confused gay.
My take on this, partially inspired by, I can't remember the title of it, but there was that Rebel Wilson movie where she basically just like somehow wakes up inside of a romantic comedy.
I forget, but I know what you mean.
I want to do a version of that. Mm-hmm. A gay man wakes up inside a romantic comedy and is forced to play straight to get ahead of business.
Mm.
And I just want everything to be, I want it to just be a giant parody on the 90s romantic comedy tropes.
What do you say he wakes up? Is it like an isekai thing where he like dies and he's now in this world?
I don't know if dies, but just some.
Sort of like one morning he awakes and finds himself in this world.
Is he trying to get back to the real world or is he just like accepting? Okay.
And some.
I mean, honestly, it would be
just
great.
Like, this is my life.
Yes,
now.
If it literally ends with him being like, and well, this is how I'm going to be, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not really sure about all the mechanics of this because I was kind of less interested in working that out than I was in just exploring the ways I could parody this bullshit that I think is dumb. But, I like this idea that Three to Tango is in the world of the movie the name of some, like, bullshit rom-com.
Yeah,
that maybe he, like, if you really wanted to kind of, like, oh, he, like, fell asleep on the couch while watching it, and maybe plausibly this is the crazy, like, fever dream he has from that. But I wanted
maybe
all...
he was in the bath watching it on a TV, and he hit his head on a low shelf, and the TV fell into the bath.
Exactly!
And electrocuted him,
yeah.
But he's not dead.
He's in a coma.
In my mind, a lot of it is going to play out kind of similarly, but it's not, you know, confused for gay. It's like, oh, you must be hetero. I don't think it's then you're assigned to look after the mistress. I think it's just... the mistress is, like, cartoonishly attracted to him. Maybe the Oliver Platt character in this is someone who he's able to eventually confide in, of like, I know I'm pretending to be this, but I'm actually this. And I do want that third friend to be, like, maybe the actual romantic interest in this, because it's like him as an actually gay man from the real world recognizes this guy as someone who is closeted, but is still maybe working through that and is very sad. And I would love for there to be a point where we maybe kind of turn down the parody for a scooch and allow that character to basically come out to this person who he thinks is just his straight friend in the world of this gonzo romantic comedy movie. And that can kind of be the conflict of, like, do I break this reality and potentially, because I think I wanted to establish that for whatever reason, again, I have not worked out the rules, the main character thinks he has to kind of see this through to, like, get back to reality. It's
a Pleasantville scenario.
Yes, it's a Pleasantville scenario. Yeah. And that it's, like, very conflicted to then have this person who he's like, probably very attracted to be like, yeah, I'm gay and I've always, like, had a thing for you. Mm-hmm. And he's, like, worried he'll shatter reality if he does it. I would so much rather him coming to the realization of, no, fuck this, like, dumb heteronormative construct. I'm gay. And, you know, maybe he does wake up, but he's able to still, like, live his truest self. In my mind, that as much as I think it's annoying and the wife ex machina of it all from the movie we just watched, but I would like that to maybe be a running thing of the Dylan McDermott character is, like, cartoonishly performative, but very condescending in his alleged tolerance of queer people. Mm-hmm. But that he and his wife are just these sex game playing, all of the shit that we were talking about was exactly what I had in mind. Mm-hmm. Just because I'm like, when I saw that, I was like, fuck, what is the rest of your relationship And I would just love for it to be like, oh, there's deviance. Anyway, bend me over this desk and paddle me. Yeah. I'm not trying to say that's deviant.
No, that's bad, Chris. And I think you're right to say it.
Yeah.
I think paddling is very naughty.
It's all you, boo.
I don't know if you guys remember how I think for a while when we did this podcast was I would write, like, lengthy synopses of what I would think movie should be. And I stopped doing that for a while because it was kind of a pain in the ass to do. To be fair, I didn't finish this because I was doing it at work and I got distracted by, like, shit that I'm paid to do, you know?
Makes sense. So, but it's back baby kind
of? Right. It's back baby kind of. It's back baby.
Kind of.
Barbecue sauce. So basically, like, my whole takeaway for this is the fact that I remember we had talked about how this is, like, a movie poster I had seen before, whether just like as a poster or on a VHS tape or whatever in a store. And the poster is the three of them, Neve Campbell in the middle, Matthew Perry and Dylan McDermott on either side. And they're all sort of like laughing looking. And, you know, and the tagline is even something like all's fair in love and war. And it's called Three to Tango. So you see that. And I think your first thought is, okay, this is a love triangle between the three of them. And it's Neve Campbell being like, which boy will I choose? They're both nice boys. How could she choose between the two of them? One's hot and one's funny. That's not at all what this movie is. I think this movie, first of all, did a very shitty job of selling itself when you look at the posters and things like that. If my takeaway is just that, similar to Lee, there is a movie called Three to Tango, and this is what the poster is, this is, like, kind of my thought for sort of incorporating what that poster is along with maybe a bit of this movie. So this involves some recasting, I think, but the idea is that Neve Campbell, first of all, should be the focus of this movie, not Matthew Perry. I think to a certain point it will also focus on Matthew and Dylan, but by and large, she is going to be the main character here. So as such, the movie opens with her in bed with Oliver Platt, who is playing this wealthy businessman who, you know, you think it's like, oh, they're married, but then it's like, oh, it's a fake out. She's his mistress. He's married and has a wife, and he's, you know, like, secretly seeing her on the side. He is the owner of a huge architecture firm, and she's been dating him for several months on the DL. Despite this, Oliver Platt is a controlling lunatic who's secretly infuriated by the idea that Neve Campbell might someday see another man. And so he resolves to do something about this. I think it's also worth noting that in this version, the Oliver Platt's boss character she's having an affair with will be, like, less of a prominent character. Like, you'll feel his presence, I think, as, like, a plot point, but he's not going to be in it all that much. Matthew Perry, playing against type, is a neurotic, sarcastic, funny man working for Oliver's firm. He's roommates with his college friend, Dylan McDermott, also playing against type as a blandly handsome, aspiring actor model who is a nice guy but kind of boring. In the movie, Matthew Perry is, in fact, gay, but tries to downplay this because this is still the 90s in this version. So he's sort of like, you know, like, that's okay, but I don't really want to sort of make it a big deal because who knows what other people think. And Dylan is his straight BFF. At work, Matthew is pretty closeted, but Oliver Platt's nosy, devoted secretary has deduced that he is secretly gay, and she always comes to Oliver with all the hot goss that he might be able to use. So Oliver already knows that Matthew is, like, an artsy, sensitive type, but he's like, oh, and he's gay, too? This is the perfect guy to watch out for Nev Campbell for me. So he calls her up to his office and is like, hey, my mistress Nev is an artsy type and I'm a possessive, jealous weirdo and you're my underling who's clearly not a threat because you're gay and thus emasculated. So I want you to insert yourself into Nev's life as a friend to basically spy on her because I'm a possessive, jealous lunatic and the thought of her so much as casually flirting with another man fills me with heterosexual rage. So keep good notes. And if you do well, maybe this will help you advance at work because we all know it's tough for a gay guy in the 90s. Am I right?
Can I borrow these lines for my parody?
Absolutely. And Matthew Perry kind of reluctantly agrees to this because, you know, he's tired of being a low-level lackey and he's like, well, this might be my chance for advancement then, frankly. So Oliver points him towards a show that Nev is doing in an art gallery and he kind of manages to insert himself into Nev's life much in this movie, and Nev kind of immediately, to her credit, figures out, like, I've listened to things you've been telling me. I have deduced the guy I'm seeing has sent you to spy on me, like, almost immediately. And she's just like, great, nice knowing you. And he's like, no. Yes, I know that's the case. Listen, I'm gay. This is why I'm doing it. I'm doing this for advancement. And she's like, okay, I get it. I'm a sensitive artsy type. I have gay friends. Like, I know times be tough. And so the two, you know, commiserate over what a pain in the ass Oliver Platt is. And we sort of go into a little bit of ideas to, like, why Nev Campbell is seeing this man. Basically, she's a horribly broken person who puts on a stiff upper lip and a tough visage when dealing with the public. Deep down inside, she only wants to date unavailable men because she just feels like she can never do any better than this. So Matt and Nev are going to start hanging out with each other. Dylan McDermott is going to show up too, because as the two of them start to hang out, they're at Matthew Perry's apartment, and Dylan McDermott, his straight hunky roommate best friend, shows up, and Nev Campbell's like, ooh, hello there, interesting here. So while this is going on, Matthew Perry is also probably maybe coming to terms with, do I have a crush on Nev Campbell now too, actually? Like, am I kind of starting to feel something for this woman? While Nev Campbell is like, do I have a crush on Dylan McDermott? And while Oliver Platt is like, but you're my mistress, right? And so it's basically just sort of everyone in this movie trying to come to terms with who they should be paired off. And like, Matthew Perry's having an existential crisis because he's like, I don't normally think of women in this way, but there's just something about her that's really appealing to me. Like, is she my best friend? Am I kind of crushing on her? What's the deal? Nev Campbell, once again, I think, is going to set her up with her hunky, gay, football-playing best friend. And Matthew Perry has to be like,
you're not feeling it.
Right, like, I like you a lot. I'm a little not sure about, like, what's going on over here right now. So, like, I think until I can figure that all out, maybe we better take a step back. And so basically what I think it's going to end up doing is, I'm really just wholesale ripping from the apartment here, but the secretary is going to be the one to let it slip to Oliver Platt's wife. He's been having a secret affair with this woman. I do think it's going to end with Dylan McDermott getting together with Nev Campbell, and Matthew Perry comes to terms with the fact that, like, no, like, I'm feeling such strong feelings toward you. This is simply just not what I think I am, not who I can be with at this moment. So it kind of ends on a promising note with him and the hunky football player, I think. I think that's kind of what I want 3 to Tango to basically be. Just sort of, you know, again, it's sort of a love triangle. It's kind of a question of opting between romantic partners and who will end up with who. And that feels kind of like what the name 3 to Tango implies, but what do I know?
Hearing both of your fixes makes me realize the title really has nothing to do.
No, this feels so much like they talked to an advertising firm and was like, we need a title for this rom-com.
Nancy Meyers,
like,
style.
Yeah, right, exactly. And they were like, 3 to Tango, there it is. And they're like, great, slap the 3 of them on a poster.
I've thought of a third thing to add to my fix. The CEO is asexual, but he's never heard of it. And he only had to discover halfway through when he's like, what? Nobody? Well, I thought everyone hated sex, really. We all just talk about how much we like it, but it's not.
I thought it was a joke.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Like, I thought I was in on the joke.
Ugh, I guess I'll have to have sex again.
Yeah.
Nice. Do you recommend 3 to Tango?
No. It's dated rom-com.
It's aggressively
There's better
dated.
Ways to watch.
Literally the only reason why I watched, was it fun to talk about? Yes. Mm-hmm. Am I glad that I could talk about it on this podcast? Yes. But I really, for only those narrow...
Yeah.
Like, talking about it for a bad movie podcast is pretty much the only reason
to
watch
like,
this.
Solid rec for this podcast. Right. Yes. That's about it.
I was watching it and I was just thinking, like, oh, I do like Nev Campbell in this. I kind of wish I saw a better rom-com with Nev Campbell in it. But, like,
same.
There's not really one, so...
It's really charming.
Yeah. It's gotta be said before the anti-woke crowd come for us.
Oh, no.
That, like... When you watch these movies, right, you can watch plenty of old movies and they are not dated.
Yeah.
This is dated. You can watch movies from the 30s that are still funny today.
Right, and I mean,
these were dated.
And I think the thing is, too, is like, there's a difference between being dated and being offensive, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you can look at something and be like, well, this probably played better when it came out, but I'm not watching it being like, oh my god, you know? It's not like someone's wandering and wearing blackface or something.
Exactly.
I think you kind of put it best before, Brendan, that it's like, this movie is kind of pats itself myself on the back for what I would say is, like, decent-ish
treatment
of gay people for 1999, and I just, it really did feel just like the bar was very
right, low. The movie aggressively thinks it's doing a good thing.
We did you gays a solid in this one.
Oh, them be the rom-coms, baby. Them That's the month of February, closing out our month of love. So come back at us in 2 weeks, where we'll be having a mini episode, of course. You can find us on our website, dratpack.com. You can, of course, subscribe to and listen to our podcast on all the basic bitch podcast apps that you got out there. For some reason, old episodes don't always show up, but they are on our website. I don't know why, but you can download them there. It's easy. We don't care. Please go ahead. Do it. See what I care. I don't care. Back in 2 weeks. Let's buy it out. Bye.
I want to swing. Jump.
With that pussy
I wanna swing.